Welcome to Christ Church Manchester Sermon Podcast. CCM is one church that meets every Sunday in various locations across Manchester. For more information about who we are or about our Sunday meetings, please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com. My home is not on this
earth, not in this world. So we have been going through the Gospel of Mark. And the Gospel of Mark is just a fascinating story, really the story of a revolution in many ways, a bit of an uprising of how the kings of the world will be overthrown and replaced with a new king, Jesus, who will rule. And Mark really tells this narrative of a revolution. And today's story explains in a little bit more detail how this revolution plays out, really who will benefit from it and what sort of king Jesus himself will be. So we find him as a king who will, as we'll see in this story, he will feed people and bring healing to his people, but also as a king who serves, not as a king who demands service from us. And really, it's a very provocative revolutionary story. And as we're going to see today, it kind of starts with lunch. So let's read. We're going to go from Mark 6, verse 30 to 44. And we'll read the whole story. And it is a famous story. You are going to know most of what happens. Even maybe if you've not been to church for a long time, you will have heard this story probably as a kid. So, the apostles returned to Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while." For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a desolate place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they ran there on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many new things. And when it grew late, his disciples came to him and said, "This is a desolate place, and the hour is now late. Send them away to go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." And he answered them, saying, "You give them something to eat." And he said to them, and they said to him, "Shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat?" And he said to them, "How many loaves do you have? Go and see." And when they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then he commanded them all to sit in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups by hundreds and by fifties. And taking the 5 loaves and 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and said a blessing, broke the loaves, gave them to the disciples to set before the people. And he divided the 2 fish among them all. And they all ate and were satisfied. And they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces and of fish. And those who ate the loaves were 5,000 men. So it's a very famous story in the Gospels. And actually, it's one of the few Gospel stories that's repeated in all four, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, of the Gospels. But before Mark tells this story, there is another story that takes place right before about King Herod, who was the ruler-in-law at the time in Israel. And Herod is miles away from where Jesus is from this event. And Mark kind of lets us know that deliberately, saying, look, King Herod is in fact very detached from his people. He is miles away over here. And what is he doing? Well, he is living in luxury. King Herod at this point was in his palace, involved in court intrigue, involved in gossip. He was also, as Mark pointed out, living in sin. So he had married his brother's wife. And John the Baptist had spoken up against this. And that didn't go well for John, as we will see. He was living in sin. He was also living for himself. What was he doing? Well, just before Jesus was feeding these people, what was Herod doing? Well, he was throwing himself a massive birthday party. That's what it says. He'd invited all the military leaders, all the leading men of Israel were there. He was having a big party. So he was very vain as a person. So vain that he didn't want to look foolish in front of these people. Even though he was the king and they would have feared him and been scared of him, actually he was scared of them. He didn't want to look foolish, and ended up, because of his own vanity, because he was scared of what others would think of him, he ended up getting John the Baptist beheaded, even though that made him sad. And that is the behavior of Israel's current king, living in luxury, living in sin, living for himself, living in vanity. And the story that Mark tells immediately after of Jesus feeding thousands is meant to be a huge contrast to this. So in the Gospel of Mark, he uses this device a number of times where he will tell a long story, and in the middle of that story he will put a seemingly unrelated story. So last week Rich talked about Jesus sending apostles on out to mission, the disciples who become the apostles on mission, and he was sending them out to save Israel, to teach them about this new king. Okay, then the story pauses, then we have King Herod throwing massive parties for himself and killing a prophet, and then it starts all over again. It says the apostles returned to Jesus, and at that point he fed the 5,000. So you're supposed to read them all together and see them as all as one big event, okay? Meant to see the contrast between King Jesus who sends and saves and King Herod who parties and kills. Okay, it's quite a stark difference. So why is Mark saying this? Why is he telling us this? Why is he making reference to Herod? It doesn't seem to make any difference to what Jesus is doing at that time. Well, actually, Mark is redefining what royalty means for us. And really, because that's what Jesus is doing, he is redefining what kings and rulers are meant to do, how they're meant to behave, the sort of people they are meant to be. And actually, we think, you know, 21st century Britain, we have an idea of how a king or a ruler would behave, wouldn't we? So we would think they are pretty well removed from us, aren't they? We rarely interact with the royal family. They are far removed from us. They're also much wealthier than us. And most of Yorkshire and Cornwall, the royals, are very wealthy. They're also more important and significant than we are. So we've seen in recent weeks and months, if one of them happens to have a baby, they get 24-hour news coverage. If one of us happens to have a baby, you might get a WhatsApp group at best, but that's it. So they are very different to us. And actually, when we read history, if you do history at school, you will see that it's often about the royal families or about the leaders, and it's rarely about the people. So you'd say two rulers, two kings had an argument and they went to war with each other. But you don't hear about the people that perhaps died in that war. But Jesus is turning this all on its head. He is redefining what it means to be a king, what it means to be royal, what it means to be a ruler. And he is the new king of God's people. And we're going to see today that actually, just in this little story of Jesus feeding thousands, we see he's a very different sort of king, because he restores his people. He actually involves his people. He brings them in. He also builds trust with his people. He brings healing to them. And finally, and most perhaps importantly, actually he is very, very powerful and directs that to serve his people. So let's look at how he restores. So we've seen the beginning of this story. He says to his disciples, come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while. So he can see that they are very tired and he wants to look out for them. But then the crowd follows. He looks at the crowd. He feels compassion. And what does he see? He describes them as sheep without a shepherd, which is very deliberate language. Actually, it echoes numbers of different Old Testament passages. We'll look at one in a moment. But this idea of a sheep without a shepherd is very important. As what Jesus is saying is they have been abandoned, these sheep. They don't have a shepherd because the shepherd has cleared off. Their leaders have left them. They are for themselves and not for their people. Actually, the leaders have led them into idolatry where they have. And if you were to read through the book of 1 and 2 Kings in the Old Testament, you would see many of the kings actually lead the people astray to worship idols. It also says they have been exploited as well. Actually, the kings have become very wealthy, very powerful, very affluent on the back of their people. And the fact that there are these thousands of people following Jesus with not much to eat illustrates that point. But Jesus sees his people and has compassion on them. Now it's fascinating how rarely any discussion of leadership involves compassion. Perhaps even you think about your workplace. You think of maybe looking to employ a new boss, and your company puts together a job description. It would probably include decisive and good work experience and all that sort of things. Rarely would it include compassion, okay, to be caring for people. Maybe even look at the what will happen with the Conservative Party in the new few weeks and months as they look to elect a new leader from amongst themselves. Many of them will be kind of jostling and looking to seem decisive and tough and even a bit ruthless, but rarely compassionate. And actually, it's a very modern narrative, that, isn't it? That our leaders work hard to look tough. But Jesus, actually, in this situation, he could have legitimately turned away these thousands of people because his apostles were really very tired. Actually, that time for them in ministry looks very intense, and it's quite likely Jesus himself was tired as well. But he cares so deeply for others, for these people that have come to him, that he goes beyond his own needs, his own wants. He is not looking to throw a party for himself. He's looking to look after his people. And actually, Ezekiel 34 gives us a real hint as to what's going on here. It says, God says, "Behold, I myself will search for my sheep and will seek them out, as a shepherd seeks out his flock when he is among his sheep that have been scattered. So will I seek out my sheep, and I will rescue them from all places where they've been scattered on the day of clouds and thick darkness." So Jesus is saying, I'm fulfilling this prophecy. These are sheep without a shepherd, but actually, I am their shepherd. I'm going to find them. I'm going to gather them to myself. He's using language which is a very godly language. And it's not to consolidate power, it's not to build an army so he can go and attack Herod and overrun Israel and rule that geographical area. Actually, it is because he's compassionate. He loves and he cares for people. Actually, it goes on in Ezekiel, says, "Look, I will feed them with good pasture. And on mountain heights of Israel shall be their grazing land. They shall lie down in good grazing land. On rich pasture they shall be fed on the mountains of Israel. And I myself will be the shepherd, and I myself will make them lie down, declares the Lord." And actually, it happens a bit later in the narrative, but you notice that Mark writes that they sat down on grass that was green. Which, when you read the story, you think, why have you told us that the grass was green? Well, it tells us a couple of things. It tells us it was springtime, which is important in the story. In springtime, there is new life, which is what Jesus is. But also paints a picture of rich pastures. Actually, a place that Ezekiel says that the Lord God will take his sheep to places where they can be fed, where they can be restored when life can be brought back to them. But Jesus' compassion in this story starts with teaching. Actually, in feeding of the 5,000, they don't turn up and he says, right, quick, let's feed them with food, sort the bread out quickly. Actually, he starts to teach them. They want to hear from him. They want to learn from him. Jesus' compassion involves his words and the words that he uses. It's for their soul. And it's a big hint as to what Jesus says actually in the Gospel of John when he talks about being the bread of life. But we encounter the compassion, we encounter the restoration of Jesus when we hear his teaching. And it's sometimes quite easy to gloss over that, especially when a preacher just throws in as an application, right, what you people need to do is read your Bible. And you're like, well, I hear that most weeks, Tim. Yes, I know I'm supposed to read my Bible. But actually, we encounter the compassion of Jesus, the restoration of Jesus, when we hear his teaching, when we go to him, and when we allow it to sink into us. It's a very important place to start. So he restores his people, but he also involves his people. And it's a really interesting story, this. And now he was teaching and it grew late. And his disciples, remember, they were very tired to start with. And now Jesus got distracted from their needs and is now teaching everybody. And his disciples say to him, look, this is a desolate place. It's really getting late. Please send them away so they can go into the surrounding countryside. They can go to the villages. They can buy themselves something to eat. Please, we're all exhausted. Let them go. And Jesus says to them, well, you give them something to eat. Which is just brilliant. So everything we have said, this illustrates how Jesus is royal, how he is a new, different sort of king, and that he wants to involve his people. And actually, he doesn't need to. He could. He is God as well. He could sort this all out on his own. But actually, there's an important maturing and growing up process here that is happening for the disciples, for these apostles. And it's important to remember this. This group of people, maybe in a couple of years, would end up going into Europe, into Asia. They would see thousands, hundreds of thousands probably, of people give their lives to Jesus. They would serve the poor. They would do miracles. And many of them actually would be killed because of their love for Jesus. They would die because of Jesus' kingdom advancing. So you think, God, this is a good group of people. They must really have been brilliant when Jesus was around. But in this moment, they argue with Jesus. In fact, they are sarcastic to Jesus and certainly very cynical. And Jesus says, you give them something to eat. And they say, right, shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread? 200 denarii was about 2/3 of a year's salary. I think you were on about a denarii a day, most people in Israel then. And so they're saying, what, should we go and blow what most of a year's salary to get bread just for this lot and give it to them to eat? So they're arguing with Jesus. And sometimes it's worth remembering that Jesus involves you even when it's often very hard to understand. Jesus doesn't involve just the people who seem like they get it and seem like they are the most mature. And the rest of us need to wait until we grow into maturity before God will involve us. Actually, Jesus is keen to involve us even when a situation seems entirely beyond you. So they had 5,000 people to feed. The situation was entirely beyond them, and yet Jesus wanted them involved. And perhaps we look at things that are going on in our own lives. Perhaps you look at situations in your family and your workplace, and your first response is, honestly, I have no idea what to do. This situation is entirely beyond me. Or perhaps we look on a grander scale. Perhaps we look at issues of poverty in our own country. Or perhaps we look at the diminishing numbers of people attending church or following Jesus. And you just think, well, what can I do? There's thousands, millions of them. What can I possibly do about that? And you don't feel any faith. Perhaps you just feel some cynicism. Well, that was exactly where the disciples were at that moment. And all they had really was obedience. And Jesus teaches them using that. So Jesus has restored his people, involved his people. And actually now Jesus builds trust with his people. And he says, okay, well, how many loaves do you have? Go and see. And they found out and they said, 5 and 2 fish. And he commanded them, said, okay, sitting down. This is on the green grass. Sitting down on the green grass. And they sat in groups. So with this response, actually in this time, Jesus doesn't really go back at them. He could have said, oh, you've got no faith. What's wrong with you people? But actually, he responds quite kindly to the apostles' cynicism and sarcasm, which I find reassuring. And it's a great example of how King Jesus involves us. Actually, in this situation, he just takes them one step at a time. And you may, as you read this, think, actually, I feel like the apostles, the disciples, I feel really of quite limited faith. I am tired like they were. I'm exhausted from work and family or whatever else is going on in life. I just see the problems. I see the challenges. I see the cost. I don't see how this is going to change. But Jesus actually isn't too concerned about that. He isn't worried about the amount of faith that you may or may not have. But he does want us to grow in our faith, in our trust in God. And actually, he's quite happy to go one step at a time. And like we said, these apostles will eventually go on and do incredible things. But right now, they have very little. And it's interesting when we think about people, just as a side issue, sometimes we take a snapshot of where they are in the moment, and in our head, that defines them. But actually, the apostles were having a horribly difficult day. They were exhausted. And so Jesus is being very kind. But he does ask them for honesty. His response is, okay, count what you've got. How many loaves have you got? And so they take the first step, is simply just to say, okay, this is all we've got. So a few weeks ago, I was sat on a train going to London, which is someplace down south, which isn't important, but I was going there anyway. And I was sat next to a guy, And I thought I recognised him, and so we got chatting, and the conversation turned to faith. Now, you may think, oh, Tim, that's very good, well done. Well, what you've got to realise is most conversations involve, how, what do you do for a living? So when somebody asked me, what do you do? I was like, well, I lead a church. And then instantly, the conversation will change. So that's what happened. Now, my confession is, in these situations, I'm really not very good at them. I'm really not very good at this sort of stuff at all. And as the conversation began, I was thinking, I'm not very good at this. I don't know how this is going to go. This could, in fact, go very badly. And so in that moment, my evangelistic gift was a couple of loaves of bread and thousands of people. That's what I was feeling. And the conversation evolved a bit. And at one point, he just said, does your church use the Bible? I was like, well, yeah, we use the Bible. He's like, because it is thousands of years old and utterly irrelevant, isn't it? I was like, well, that's one way of looking at it, yeah. But no, we use the Bible and we believe it is relevant. He say, but some of it is thousands of years old, isn't it? Really, very strange stuff in there. And I said, well, yes, it is. But the Sunday before, I'd preached here on Jairus' daughter and the lady who'd bled for years. And I don't know if you remember, but we use Leviticus 15, where it talks about where women are on their periods, they are unclean. And so if you are ill and that period lasts for years and years, you are permanently unclean and out of the presence of God. So I said, yeah, parts of the Bible are really weird, really hard to understand. Let me tell you about one bit. And he was looking at me like I was crazy. And I said, but actually, Jesus, he ends the uncleanness. What you've got to understand about the difficult stuff in the Bible is Jesus resolves it. Jesus makes us all clean and heals us. And after I said it, I was like, oh, I did all right. That actually worked quite well. And I was praying all the way through to myself because I was genuinely a bit scared. But for me in that, it was just the first test. It was a trust step. The first step, sorry. And it was just to engage in conversation. And I felt it, usually on a train, I'm earphones in or reading a newspaper and I just zone out the whole world. But when this guy sat next to me, because I thought I recognised him, I thought, okay, let's start a conversation. I think there was God nudging that in me. But Jesus is trustworthy and he wants to build our trust in him. And sometimes when we think about our faith, we can think of Jesus and we must instantly trust and give him anything, everything. And he is demanding that and offering us nothing. But in this story, we see actually he slowly draws out his apostles. And actually, as we were to read on in Mark, they didn't really learn very much. They were still struggling. Our next story in Mark, it will say they didn't understand what happened with the bread. They just didn't understand it. Actually, Jesus is slowly building them in, teaching them, discipling them, and bringing them through. He is a different sort of king. He doesn't demand obedience without help. And finally, Jesus directs power at his people. So where Herod was using power for himself, to make himself more powerful, to give himself more finance and authority, actually, Jesus uses his power to serve and love his people. So they took the five loaves and the fish, and Jesus looks up to heaven, says a blessing, broke the loaves and gave it to the disciples to set before the people. And we know what happens. They all ate, they were all satisfied, there were 12 baskets of fish and bread left. And those who ate the loaves were 5,000 men. And every commentary on this says, that for some reason they only counted the men, but there would have been women there and children. We could have been talking about over 10,000 people. But what we see is actually Jesus directs his power at his people. And that changes everything. That's actually a fascinating little bit of narrative there. Because Mark doesn't really help us modern Westerners who want to know what on earth happened. Did suddenly 2,500 loaves of bread turn up and they halve them and give them out to people? Was there hundreds of thousands of fish lying around? Or did when they keep just handing it out that the loaf never got smaller? What happened? We don't understand. Well, all we need to know, and all Mark wants us to know, is that he takes the very little that we have and he transforms it. And actually, the gospel is packed full of stories about how the kingdom of God starts small. So there are lots of stories about seeds being sown, or mustard seeds being like faith, or perhaps a small amount of yeast in a batch of bread. Tiny, small, insignificant things, actually, God transforms them. Turns them into things that are much bigger. Turns them into a vast kingdom of God. And that is Jesus' preferred way, is actually to start with really not very much and to watch it grow. And so you may be reflecting on different things in your life, think, well, I've got a tiny amount of energy or time in my week to do anything, or I don't feel like I have very much faith for these things to change. And actually, Jesus can take that entire lack of faith and turn it into something. Where the disciples saying, their response was sarcasm and cynicism, Jesus took that and began to change it. So Jesus restores his people, whereas King Herod dominated his people, abused his people. Actually, Jesus restores, like the great shepherd. He brings them together. He gathers them to himself. He looks after them. He takes them to a place where there is green grass, where they can be fed and looked after. He involves his people as well. We're not just blind and stupid and just follow with no thought for ourselves. Actually, he wants to bring us in. He wants us to be involved in his kingdom advancing and our faith growing and us growing in maturity. Also, he wants to build trust with his people. He brings us through slowly, takes us the one step at a time that we can deal with. And also, he directs power at his people. His power is not aimed purely at himself to make himself look good, but actually it's to restore us, to bring significant change. So our faith, and even this morning you might be thinking, what I have is insignificant, Tim. Actually, even my gifting, what I'm good at, I hate even talking in public, let alone talking to anyone about God. I can't even remember how you explain the gospel properly. I'm not even sure how I can be hopeful for the difficulty that there is at home at the moment. Or I don't know how I get hope to be kind to my boss because he's an idiot. I don't know how to do these things. What I have is minuscule. It is insignificant. I think in this story we see that Jesus takes that and uses it. And all he asks for us is just to offer him what we have.